You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7 WVXU and WMUB. Good morning. I'm Mark Purzel. Glad to have you along and glad to have Richard Polt here in the studio with me. Richard works at Xavier University right now, but he is also the author of a new book called The Typewriter Revolution, A Typist's Companion for the 21st Century. It looks at typewriters and no, they're not dead. They're still here. Richard, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Instead of talking about the near death and rebirth, let's start at the beginning. When did typewriters really come into popularity and why?
Well, commercial manufacture started in the 1870s, and then in the 1880s and 1890s, people recognized that, these things were actually useful because they were efficient, they were quick, you could make a lot of copies. And with the growth of business and government in the U.S. at that time, they were a very useful tool.
And the typewriter actually began as something of a, well, I don't want to call it a novelty, but some of those early machines that you show in the typewriter revolution are strange. The writer's ball, what was that called?
The writing ball, yeah, that was a Danish invention. It kind of looks like a pincushion. And there are a lot of other really odd 19th century inventions. People had a remarkable amount of trouble figuring out how to make this concept work.
So what made it step over the line and become more popular? When did typewriters go from being just a novelty to being something that was truly, what was the little technological advance that happened?
It's hard to point to any single thing, but in the early 1890s, the balance seemed to tip, and all major offices realized, we need a typewriter. And that meant they also needed a female typewriter, also known as a typist. So a big social effect of this was that women entered the workplace for the first time.
So computers, of course, came along and made, shall we say, word processing a little more efficient. And that's something you hear about when it comes to typewriters. You mentioned in the book that if you go and type in public, the first thing people, they'll reminisce or ask what you're doing, but they also say, why are you doing something that's so inefficient? But you argue that it's not that inefficient.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's certainly not the most efficient way to put a neat pile of text on a piece of paper. And, it is obsolete in that way. So I don't think that's its purpose anymore. Now, if you turn to a typewriter, it means something different than it used to mean. The thing still works the same way, but it means something personal and individual and kind of quirky, and clearly you're doing it not because it's an efficient means to an end, but because you value it as an end in itself.
It seems that word processing really did a number on typewriters. We went from typewriters being our main form of printed business documents to they got wiped out, it seemed, in no time flat.
Yes, in the 80s, I think it took about a decade, but in 1980, everybody was using a typewriter except for a few geeks, right? And in 1990, everybody, including me, had switched to computers. But surprisingly, typewriters are still being made today. Even manual typewriters are still being made and sold today. So there's a kind of a long trail after a steep decline where they refuse to die altogether. And then it's not the new typewriters, but the old classics that a lot of people, including lots of young people, are really loving and adopting today.
And you talk about the hipsters liking it, or do they? Is it really hipster to have a typewriter?
I'm not sure what a hipster is exactly. It's a kind of an elusive species. And there's also the anti-hipster phenomenon, which is really strong in places like New York, where there's a whole hipster subculture. So there's some odd cultural dynamics going on there. I do think that along with vinyl records and Polaroids and kind of other physical, crafty ways of doing things, they have been adopted by some hipsters, but also by other demographics.
I'm speaking with Richard Polt, the author of The Typewriter Revolution, A Typist's Companion for the 21st Century. You can learn more about the book at wvxu.org. And repeatedly in your book, you are talking about the revolution here, Richard. This is not just a history of the typewriters. This covers a lot of ground, including how to maintain your own typewriter, how to set up a typing station, how to be part of the typosphere, which we'll talk about in just a bit. A lot happens in the typewriter revolution. What brought you to bring this together at this point in time?
Well, I've always enjoyed typewriters. I mean, I'm old enough. We're both digital immigrants, right? Half our lives, more or less. Computers were a pretty remote thing, and then digital technology became an everyday thing. So I grew up with typewriters. I always loved them. I've been collecting them for 20 years. But about 5 years ago, I started typecasting. And that means that you blog by typewriter. You type your blog post, and then you scan it or photograph it and put it online. I thought I'd give it a try. It was fun. But that connected me to a network of people who were really using typewriters today and doing lots of creative things. And the more I paid attention, the more I saw that there really is a worldwide revival of interest. So I thought, you know, this combined with our growing awareness of the dangers of over-digitization is the material for a book.
But you say this is not an anti-digital movement. The typewriter revolution isn't necessarily an anti-digital movement. And you readily confess in the book that, yes, you wrote this book on a computer. It's not on a typewriter, but many of the ideas are inspired by typewriters. But that is something. I was fascinated by the arguments you made about of typewriters, especially in this digital world, talking about privacy, talking about being out of the data stream. And when you stop to consider what's happening in this digital world, the typewriter really is a revolution.
I think it can be one valuable way to get a little distance from our current technology. So you're right. It's not an anti-digital movement per se. It's an anti-over-digital movement. So, you know, when we get caught up in the idea that there should be an internet of everything or that digital is always better, I think that's really foolish. And we're all aware now of issues like privacy, as you mentioned, the loss of concentration that comes from multitasking and the constant distraction of the digital environment, harm to our social connections. So we have more, quote, friends than ever, but our interactions with them are not high quality. And typewriters and other just physical, non-digital things can be a partial remedy for that.
You brought a typewriter here. You mentioned you have your collection. You've been collecting for 20 years. And I was telling you, I've just always loved typewriters. My mom was a typist, always typed all her letters and correspondence. And so I was used to the clack and the ding and, you know, the sound, very reassuring sound of the typewriter. And I thought, oh, boy, I could get back in this. But this is really this revolution. I'm a latecomer to it, I confess, because
you're behind the curve.
I'm way behind the curve. And you brought in, you said you have, what, 300 machines at home?
I'm afraid it's over 300. Yeah, I lost count exactly. I brought in a machine that's not really part of my permanent collection, but it's one that I fixed up for sale to support Wordplay Cincy, which is a local nonprofit that helps kids with writing and tutors them. So I'm their typewriter guy. I fix up the typewriters that the kids use, and then I do typewriter repair and refurbished typewriters for sale.
So talk about this. Beautiful. Yeah. It's almost a work of art, and that's what I love, all the pictures of the typewriters in the typewriter revolution. Many, or if not all, from your collection, I would imagine, but just gorgeous little works, sculptural works almost, all the different designs. And this, what the Remington that you brought in, tell us about it. It's a beautiful black and just a gleaming machine.
Yes, it's a black, bulbous, streamlined Art Deco machine made in 1937. It's called the Remington 5 Portable, and it's very shiny. I can type a bit on it if you'd like
the audience
to hear a little.
Wow. I love the
makes
sound
of that. Yeah.
And amazing machines, too. What, there are thousands of parts in typewriters.
That's true. Yeah, they're quite complex, and so it took quite a bit of skilled manual labor, and these were not cheap machines.
So this this Remington, you have refurbished it to raise money for Wordplay Cincy, and I was struck as I read the Typewriter Revolution how widespread typewriters are these days, not only at places like Wordplay, but you have people on street corners with typewriters doing poetry. Talk a little bit about where typewriters are being used today in this digital world.
Yeah, they keep on popping up. And street typing is one of the most interesting and I think boldest things you can do with a typewriter. I've tried it myself in a group. I'm not brave enough to do it on my own. But there's a group here in Cincinnati called Chase Public that is in Northside and organizes a lot of cultural events. And sometimes they do street typing. They'll do poetry or short stories. People can come up and suggest a theme, and then on the spot, they will compose something. And I think everybody who's done this tells me that typewriters are a great tool for this. They're dramatic. They're suspenseful, right? Because with every choice, you know that It's going to be irrevocable. It's going onto that piece of paper. It can't be just deleted. So it heightens the excitement, and people seem to love the ability to take away a typed piece of paper.
What's the biggest challenge with typewriters today? I mean, I was going to say I had ribbed my mom, who will brag that she has 5 typewriters at home, manual, electric, and otherwise, many, many different brands. And I said, oh, yeah, but can you get a ribbon for it? Well, you can. Talk about the state of typewriters today.
It's not that bad. No, you can easily get a ribbon. You know how to search for things on the internet. Search for typewriter ribbon, and there it is. So that part is easy. Getting them professionally repaired may be a little more challenging for some people. There are more repairmen, usually they're men, who are active than you might think. And I have a list of them on my website, the Classic Typewriter page. There are a couple of places here in Cincinnati. I'm one of the guys. I'm an amateur, but I do it to help wordplay. If there's nobody near you who will professionally repair them, then you shouldn't give up hope, because there are communities online that can give advice. And one of the nice things about typewriters, especially manual ones, is you can intuitively understand how they work. You know, just pay close attention, use logic, be patient, and you'll understand it.
I mentioned thousands of parts, but as you point out in the typewriter revolution, every part has a specific use, so it's not just extraneous. It may be there, but you can figure out what it's doing.
Yeah, everything except maybe the logo has a practical use, and you can figure out its purpose.
Richard Polt, the author of The Typewriter Revolution, A Typist's Companion for the 21st Century. Details about the book, a great compendium of all things typewriter, available at our website, wvxu.org. And I mentioned the typosphere, and this was something I wasn't familiar with, but you mentioned about communities online. And talk about the typosphere.
Well, if you start a blog either about typewriters or actually typed with a typewriter, then we consider you a member of the typosphere, which is a tiny little corner of the blogosphere, right? And there is a kind of Typosphere Central. It's a site called Welcome to the Typosphere that you can easily find. And there's a list of blogs there. Some are more active than others, but it's a lot of fun. You feel that you're part of a community with people in Australia or Switzerland or England who are doing similar things and share the same passion.
So with these vintage typewriters, what is the biggest challenge in, we talked about the parts, but you do have a section in the Typewriter Evolution. You talk about maintaining and how to fix your own typewriter. You mentioned the there are some shops. I was wondering about that. I hadn't gone looking for one anytime lately, Richard, so I didn't know for sure if there was any in Cincinnati. But what might be the biggest challenge when it comes to dealing with typewriters in this day and age?
I don't think there is any insurmountable challenge. You know, there's some things that will tend to go wrong with an old typewriter. Let's say the draw band or string that pulls the carriage along might snap. Well, you can figure that out.
Yes.
Your ribbon might get tangled. Well, you can sort that out. It's something that really you can have control over. And that's a very nice contrast to my computer. I have no clue, really, how the computer works. And I'm not sure that any single person understands the interactions of all the components and all the software in my particular computer. At least it certainly isn't me. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have a tool that I can actually comprehend.
So as you've been talking to folks about the typewriter revolution, now the books come out. You know, as I said, I love typewriters. I didn't realize there are still a whole lot of people who like typewriters. But what's been the reaction? I mean, what has surprised you the most about the reaction, Richard?
There hasn't been anything very surprising. I think I've known that a lot of people have a kind of latent curiosity or interest in typewriters. They haven't thought about them maybe for many years, but if you start talking to them, or more if they see you using a typewriter in public, they'll usually be really intrigued and charmed. A few people will scoff and say, oh, he's just a hipster. but that doesn't really mean anything. That just means I don't understand why this guy's doing that. And I try to show that, well, first of all, it's fun. And secondly, there's some really good reasons to try it.
And some creativity involved. I mean, we talked about the street poets using a typewriter. I know artists who have used a typewriter in their works. But there's also custom typewriters. I found that a very interesting section of your book, The Typewriter Revolution. Talk about custom typewriters.
Well, that's a really fun thing. So it's like hot rods, right? You can take a typewriter, and I would only do this with a common model, not a rare antique. But you can repaint it. You can strip off the paint and get an interesting effect. You might want to replace the keys with vintage keys, as I've done, or put some fun decals on it and just kind of soup it up. You can also modify it so it can interact with a computer, actually. So there's something called the USB typewriter kit, which you can attach to many common typewriters, and it doesn't hurt their function as typewriters, but it will let them serve as a keyboard. And either they can be input devices for a computer, or they can write directly onto a card.
Well, I'm enthralled by everything I read in the typewriter revolution, and I think I'll be joining that revolution before too long. I appreciate you bringing it all to light here, Richard.
Great. Thank you for joining us, then.
The Typewriter Revolution, A Typist's Companion for the 21st Century. Author Richard Polt. Details about the book at wvxu.org. This is The Book Club at 91.7. You've been listening to The Book Club at 91.7. Technical director for the show is Rick Andres. Producer is Kevin Reynolds. Web guru is Jim Nolan. And I'm Mark Purcell. Next weekend, you'll hear Lauren Groff discussing her hit novel, Fates and Furies. Austin Kleon sharing the creative inspiration for the Steel Like an Artist Journal. And W. Bruce Cameron with his novel, The Dog Master, a novel of the first dog. I hope you'll be here too for The Book Club at 91.7. Stay tuned for Weekend Edition next on WVXU, and have a great Saturday.